This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Celebrities say the darndest things.
Yeah, and they tend to be just not true. Especially in the case of Jussie Smollett, the actor from Empire. Most of conservative Twitter quickly realized that his story of a hate crime perpetuated against him by two Trump supporters. We knew that it was fake. We knew there were some questions that needed to be asked, but we were kind of the only ones. Progressives on Twitter, progressives over at CNN and the Washington Post and the New York Times and MSNBC and whatever blog or podcast it is that you follow, they seemed to be pretty confident at the time that his story was true. And it wasn't one of those stories that we can say in retrospect there were some red flags. There were red flags that conservatives were pointing out the entire time. And people willfully ignored it. 2 a.m., one of the coldest nights of Chicago history. We're supposed to believe that two dudes, originally believed to be white, would beat up one of the least recognizable stars of Empire, somehow able to see that it was Jussie Smollett. Beat him up. They just happened to have a rope on them that they ended up putting around his neck. That they also just happened to have a bottle of bleach on them that didn't freeze in this weather and poured it on top of him. Then they beat him up. They called him anti-gay and anti-black slurs. And then screamed, "This is MAGA country," and we were all supposed to just go with that. Of course, Smollett wouldn't go to the ER. He wouldn't give up his phone for the investigation, even though he said at the time he was calling his manager, who was a witness to it. Wouldn't give any of it up. And it turns out it's a hoax. It was a staged attack. The two attackers actually knew him, actually worked on Empire in some capacity. They're brothers. This is what the reporting is now saying. They were paid to, quote-unquote, attack Jussie Smollett. People leaned into that story and they wanted to believe it. They wanted to believe it because it portrayed a country that they believe Trump ruined. They say Donald Trump is a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, a total bigot. And as a result, people are out there, inspired by this hate, committing these acts of atrocities. Only didn't happen. Al Sharpton leaned in immediately, didn't wait for any facts before he decided to present the story as a fact. On MSNBC over the weekend, he had some harsher words for Jussie Smollett.
I, among many others, when hearing of the reports, said that the reports were horrific and that we should come with all that we can come with in law enforcement to find out what happened, and the guilty should suffer the maximum. I still maintain that. And if it is found that Smollett and these gentlemen did in some way perpetrate something that is not true, they ought to face accountability to the maximum.
Now, what does that mean exactly? I don't know. I don't know what the punishment would be for this, but understand that there are some real victims here. Understand Chicago is plagued by violence, plagued by violence. And this hoax story took actual detectives off of legitimate cases of crime to focus on this. They wasted resources. They wasted time. All to go after an attack that never took place. Understand that now people who come forward every single time we have a story like this, you hurt the credibility of people who are actual victims. Because God forbid something similar does actually happen to someone. People aren't going to believe that story. That's part of the reason why so many people are upset with this. And then you've got Brian Stelter of CNN pretending that the news media played no role in any of this. That, oh, we were all responsible for the most part.
I think in retrospect, that Good Morning America interview, which allowed him to tell his side of the story, that just made things worse for him. And perhaps the questioning was not tough enough on Good Morning America. But ultimately, this is not about the media or about politicians or activists or any of the people that might have been fooled.
Uh-huh.
It's about Jussie. And I agree with what everyone else has said. This is about why he might And so far we don't know, but why he might have made this up, it just boggles the mind.
So now we're starting to learn why he might have made this up. And it's interesting because he's arguing, at least these leaks are contending, that Jussie Smollett received some kind of threatening letter and it didn't get the attention that he thought it deserved. Now I'm wondering if this letter also was a fraud.
The FBI is looking into a threatening letter Smollett received just days before the reported attack, the words pieced together by magazines, and a drawing depicting a rope around a stick figure's neck. Days later, Smollett said that's what happened to him during the reported attack. During a raid of the brothers' home last week, only CBS2's cameras were allowed inside. Among the items investigators walked away with, a magazine, a piece of paper along with a writing sample, and a wallet with stamps. Multiple sources say Smollett was upset the threatening letter didn't receive a bigger reaction. That's when he orchestrated the attack with the brothers.
Now, was the letter fraudulent? Was that also a fraud? Because some of the rumors were that he was going to be written out of Empire after this season. Now, I don't know if that's true. The producers of the show came out and said that that wasn't true. But there is a report today in the New York Post that says the next episode that he's on, he was supposed to be on in 9 scenes. They completely took him out of 5 of them. And in the 4 remaining scenes, they make him a secondary character, not the main character of the scene. So he's going to lose his job over this. It should be much worse. Because not only did he take resources away from actual crimes that need solving, he perpetuated this myth about Trump supporters. He perpetuated this myth that Trump supporters are hardcore bigots and that President Trump specifically is creating an environment where something like this can happen. And people jumped on it so quickly. People jumped on it so quickly to make a point that backed up their bias. And that's why. That's why this story spread the way that it did. Andy Ngo is an independent journalist. He's going to be on the show at 5:30 to talk more about this. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So the Democratic race to become the nominee for president is in full swing with more people jumping in. Of course, we talked about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders. He is now. That wasn't good. I need to redo that one. Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
I am running for president. I am Bernie Sanders. That was better.
Does he say, I am Bernie Sanders?
Bernie Sanders. And I am running for president. He's not the only one running. Kirsten Gillibrand and Amy Klobuchar, 2 senators, they're running. And Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York, kind of floundering. Amy Klobuchar from Ohio, she's doing all right. She's trying to differentiate herself. She doesn't want to be known as the crazy Democrat. She's actually, as of right now, assuming we don't count Howard Schultz because he's not running as a Democrat, she's the most mainstream. And it's interesting because she goes on CNN Town Hall and she said some of the things that make the most sense, at least from a mainstream perspective. This was the lowest rated town hall for CNN. But she did say that free 4-year college, completely unattainable.
I am not for free 4-year college for all. No. Thank you.
So, it's a funny thing to clap at.
This because,
And I wish if I was a magic genie and could give that to everyone and we could afford it, I would. I'm just trying to find a mix of incentives and make sure kids that are in need, that's why I talked about expanding Pell Grants, can go to college and be able to afford it. Yeah. And that make sure that people that can afford it are able to pay.
Yeah, we're on a college campus, so you know many of the questions.
I know that.
But
I've got to tell the truth. I mean, we have this mounting... We have a mounting debt that the Trump administration keeps getting worse and worse. I also don't want to leave that on the shoulders of all these kids.
Okay,
right?
So she's sounding there in her interview, the town hall with Don Lemon. She's sounding there like a mainstream Democrat. Now, we don't have to agree with that because we're not Democrats. But this whole idea of pushing back against this absurd notion that's being pushed by progressives that we're going to be able to give you free college, whoever wants it, come and get it. That's just absurd. And I'm glad she's being the adult in the room for the Democrats. So kudos to her. Now, unfortunately, again, no one actually saw it because it was the lowest rated CNN town hall. Now, at the same time, we've got Kirsten Gillibrand out there. And she was giving a speech inside a restaurant for some reason that we're not entirely sure of. And she gets interrupted by a woman who literally was only there to get some ranch dressing.
I don't think you should back back away from the bold ideas that the base and the grassroots care about.
Sorry, oh, sorry. I'm just trying to get some ranch.
Go ahead.
Oops.
It was so awkward. It was so awkward. But it kind of shows you what, number one, you have to deal with when you're running these types of elections this early on. And number two, it shows you really the key difference between someone like a Klobuchar and a Kirsten Gillibrand. Because some of these things are likely happening to everyone. That was just a funny moment for poor Kirsten Gillibrand. I feel kind of bad, mostly because I don't like ranch dressing. If it was blue cheese or maybe some honey mustard, it kind of depends, I guess, on what she was using the condiment for. God bless her. She just wanted some ranch. You're listening to the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH in the Online Trading Academy studio. You want to send me a text message, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. It's the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
Members of Students for Life and local pro-life groups are protesting outside of Senator Murray's Seattle Senate office right this second. And they're doing it because they want to protest her opposition to her position on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Act. This is something that's happening right this second, and we're now joined on the line by Carly Logic. She's the state squad captain for Students for Life Action. Thank you so much for coming on, Carly. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be on.
So take us through this action that's happening right now. We kind of just, we got a little bit thrown by this because we weren't expecting this protest today. What are you protesting and how are you protesting?
We were outside the Henry Jackson building in Seattle to rally against Patty Murray's vote to block legislation that would have protected babies born alive during abortions.
And how is the protesting manifesting itself today? How many people are there? What exactly is the action you're taking?
There's about 50 people. We have speakers just outside, out in front of the building with a megaphone, and so that everyone on the street can see us going by with our signs, and anyone who's coming by can hear our opposition to this kind of legislation.
And what's particularly disturbing about this, she was the only senator who decided to vote against this call out against infanticide. And she took a position that, regardless of anyone's position on abortion, I think most reasonable people would call her support pretty extreme. What was, from your perspective, take us through why you were so alarmed.
Well, because this goes beyond abortion. These are infants that are born alive during botched abortions. They're lying on the table, struggling to breathe, fighting for their lives. And Senator Patty Murray is waiting to determine if their life is valuable enough to be saved.
Has anyone from her office come out and interacted with you guys at any point?
No, we didn't run into anyone.
If they came out there and they wanted to have a conversation with you, because I know that you're not there solely to disrupt their day. You're there because you want to have some meaningful dialogue. What would that dialogue sound like? What would you say to them?
We would tell them that the majority of Americans reject their extreme abortion agenda and that we want them to start representing their constituents. Students for Life did a poll and found that only 7% of millennials agree with the Democratic Party on abortion. And the party needs to start reflecting the views of their constituents.
So in that poll, you're saying 7% of millennials are pro-choice and the rest are pro-life?
Not exactly. So 7% agree with the Democratic Party. So they're their stance is abortion on demand, all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason. So there are some people there are some millennials that identify as pro-choice, but they believe that that is far too extreme.
Okay, so there's a caveat then, because that's really what this is about. It sounded like you were saying that the majority of millennials are, in fact, pro-life, when we know that that's not true. But when you get into the specifics, I would argue that this kind of infanticide support, in your words, which was what they ended up voting on, that is extreme. And I don't think even pro-choice folks would take that position unless there was something having to do with the health of the mother involved. So they're not going to speak to you. What do you want to have happen as a result of this? What realistically, after this protest is said and done, what do you think is going to happen?
We're hoping to raise awareness for people who might not pay as much attention to politics as people who are very involved in the pro-life movement do. And we're hoping to mobilize the people of Washington to contact Senator Murray's office and let her know that they're not okay with what's going on.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking by any standard what Patty Murray did on this particular vote. We've been talking with Katie Logic. She's the Northwest Regional Coordinator for the Students for Life. For more information, studentsforlife.org. Katie, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Snowpocalypse Mageddon.
So finally, it took an 18-year-old from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, to figure out what needs to happen in this region, at least Seattle, when it comes specifically to dealing with snow. It seems like the city was caught off guard, even though we knew that the snow was coming. But David Holston, just 18 years old, he was coming to the area from Idaho. And he realized, oh, I could bring over my snowplow equipment. I can actually do some work while I'm here, because that's the kind of kid David is. And so he puts up an ad on Craigslist for some jobs to clean up the snow, to plow the snow from parking lots of businesses, because businesses out there can't just close up shop just like that. They want to make sure that they're not leaving potential revenue on the table. And so he ended up putting up this ad. He got so many requests. He ended up making, he says, $35,000 over the course of just a few days of work, when back at home, in his actual job, he owns the snow plow and landscape business that he does on the side. He only makes $30,000 in a year, but here, in just a few days, he made $35,000.
Last year was my first year, so it wasn't too much, maybe $30,000 total last year with the plowing.
Yeah.
This year, I'm hoping to expand my business, hire some brothers, and then go to town. Just bringing more customers in. We'll see what the Lord has in store.
So that's David talking with our sister station, Cairo Radio, on the Dory Monson Show. And he says he was surprised by how many jobs he ended up getting hired to do.
Well, I figured I might get $1,000 by doing one job.
Yeah.
But then as I was driving over to Seattle, a lot of people were calling me, and even while I was in Seattle. And so I was working long days. From Monday morning to Tuesday morning, I worked 24 hours straight. And there are a lot of times I would work
that sounds
over 12-hour days. And then I was plowing. As I was plowing, people were calling. My phone wouldn't stop ringing. And the Lord really blessed me by giving me this opportunity to come over and plow.
Good for this kid. I feel so happy when I hear stories of young people who get involved in anything, whether we're talking about politics, like the young woman we just spoke to from this protest outside of Senator Murray's office, to this kid who's just a young business person. And he just wants to do what's right. He wants to make a good profit out of it. And by the way, what does he do with the money? You would think that, oh, he's just a kid. He's probably wasting it on video games and drugs. I mean, maybe some on video games, probably not the drug stuff. He's actually reinvesting a lot of that money into newer equipment for his job out in Idaho. And he's also saving money to buy a house. That's awesome. With that said, I don't like this kid because he gave you a little bit of sass.
He did give me
a little bit of sass. Yeah. I don't think he intended to give you sass, but you called him because we wanted to talk with him because I thought that the story was cool. And what did he tell you?
Well, first off, great kid, but I called him and I said, hey, listen, great story. Why don't you come? I want to come on the Jason Rant Show. And he said, I'll think about it and I'll call you back and give you my answer.
Did he ever call us back?
Nope, never called us back.
That's funny. I mean, good for him for taking, for like, that's a baller move. Some 18-year-old
I have a lot of
kid.
Offers on the table right now. I'm currently weighing them.
Let me talk to my people. Let me figure out. Let me talk to my publicist and see if they want me to do it.
My people good call your people.
Good for him. I can already tell that this is a kid who's got a future in business. And none of this nonsense of, oh, the 7-year-old set up a lemonade stand using her cuteness to get a job or to get money coming in. This is a kid who's using his grit, a little bit of attitude to promote.
Yeah, my feeling is when he finally gets a real full-time job, that first contract, there's going to be negotiations for it.
Absolutely. By the way, if he calls us wanting to come on, what are you going to tell him?
Hell no.
Exactly. Because what are we above all? While I'm impressed by this kid, I'm also petty. And no, sir. You either say yes the first time around or we're done. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send us a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. From the Jussie Smollett hoax to the Patriot Prayer controversy happening right now in Portland, Oregon, we've got a lot to discuss with my next guest, Andy Ngo. He's an editor at Quillette and an independent journalist with work appearing in the National Review. Andy joins me now. Andy, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me on, Mr. Ryan.
So, Jussie Smollett, this Empire actor, the hoax basically exploded in not just his face over the weekend and the long weekend, but the faces of a whole bunch of journalists. How did journalists initially cover this story, and how do you see them reacting to this update?
Well, the established media, which leans left or is far left in some quarters, obviously took his outrageous claims at face value because it fits with their own biases about America being a racist place, that Trump supporters are anti-gay and racist. So they didn't seem to see all the red flags that outsiders might have noticed didn't really make sense about the story. For me, when I first heard it, even though I'm gay and person of color, it seemed like poor script writing out of the screenplay. You know, it was in sub-freezing temperatures, these white men attacking him in the middle of the night in the dark and having a noose and saying this is MAGA country. This is just not how people talk in real life, and it was comical. But all these journalists took it at face value. Some of them didn't even mention, didn't even use the word alleged in it. They reported it as fact, and stories spread like wildfire. And, of course, the people who were the loudest when the story happened, that being celebrities and politicians, are now uncharacteristically quite quiet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting with Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Cory Booker both basically saying that this was a modern-day lynching. They were very quick to judge the story without questioning any of the details when it was first reported. But over the long weekend, they both basically wouldn't take a position saying, oh, no, we should actually wait. And this is a developing story. All of a sudden, it's a developing story to them.
Yeah, that was what Senator Cory Booker said when he was questioned. And then he pivoted to talking about right-wing terrorism and mm-hmm. white supremacy in America. I hope that this makes people... This has made me really cynical about if these politicians are even leading in good faith. I'm not really sure. I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt before, but it seems like these stories are used as... are exploited for their political gain, and they don't care about the divisions that this creates in American society.
Well, it seems like they're playing into the same bias that we see in some of these news anchors and reporters who went ahead and just jumped on the story, in that they want to believe the facts about this country because they believe it makes a bigger point about how evil and racist everyone is. And yet, you know, when we see these stories, and you did a really good job on Twitter over the long weekend outlining so many hoax stories, it seems like when you have to create a hoax to make a point about how evil the country is, maybe the country's not as evil as you say.
You know, I wasn't even just highlighting hoax stories in this country in general. I was focusing on the subset of where either Trump or his voters were blamed. And even with that would give me a very large sample to work with. And I noticed two things. One, there was a spate of them happened right after the election. And I think that was incentivized by the SPLC. That's my personal view, just because the SPLC was cited a lot in the media at the time. They issued a lot of press releases and reports, and it really kind of incentivized this panic. And then the other thing I noticed is that the hoaxes happened disproportionately at universities. And it's my view that this victimhood ideology, victimhood culture, is born from academia, but been mainstreamed now into society and college and culture.
Well, in the last few weeks, the media has not had a good track record. We look to the Covington High School story and how that was overblown and just improperly reported. And then, of course, we go to Jussie Smollett and this idea that the person who made the accusation should not only just immediately be believed, but we should just disseminate that as fact rather than an allegation. What's the bigger message here as to why the media at least appears so susceptible? Is it that they're susceptible, or is it something else at work here?
It's because the establishment legacy media is systematically biased in one direction, so they don't see the holes of – they don't notice the red flags of stories that should – make people skeptical, should make normal people skeptical, make objective people skeptical, because they're not objective. They have their own biases. And I think the, you know, media criticisms are unending. We just had Covington happen last month, which was basically a hoax as well. And nobody learned from that, of course. But I think the deeper message is that we are at a point in our society and culture where we worship victimhood, and people have so much to gain from being a victim. Mm-hmm. Some of them, many of them, will lie about it. And outside of the uncommon prosecutions for people who get held accountable for fabricating hoax crimes, a lot of people get away. Sometimes police investigations just don't move forward anymore because they don't want to cooperate, or the universities will not name these individuals to protect their identities. And they just, so you have a lot to gain and not very much to lose, because you probably won't get caught.
Exactly.
Because people are taught now to center the victim rather than centering objectivity, caution, facts.
Just joining me, we're talking with Andy Ngo. He's an editor at Quillette. He's also an independent journalist who's got an article about the Jussie Smollett hoax in the National Review this week. At the same time, you've been tracking a story that's happening in Portland, which is actually where you live. You've got this brewing story about Patriot Prayer, and specifically the Portland PD. What exactly is the controversy?
Yeah, so the overarching connection that kind of makes me focus on all this is on the excesses of social justice, this ideology of supposedly about finding any means justifies the end, of in their worldview of finding justice. So there's been a trifecta in Portland, three things that happened. On February 7th, Portland City Council unanimously passed a resolution condemning white supremacy and alt-right hate groups. Now, when I looked at the resolution, most of it is about acknowledging history of racism in Portland, which as a gesture for me, I think is fine. Where I was more concerned where my eyebrows were raised is that it seeks to use public resources in re-educating all city employees in, quote, identifying white supremacy. Now, what the resolution doesn't say is, well, what definitions would they be using for some of these terms and concepts that they name? Who will be developing the curriculum? What organizations they'll be working with? I've spent the last 12 days almost every day contacting the mayor's office, multiple people there to try to get clarification for these questions, and they have not answered. I've been strung around, ignored, sent to other people. So I don't even know if they even have thought this resolution out to its logical conclusion. But at the resolution, at the hearing, people gave testimony of how they felt so unsafe in Portland, like that at any moment they could get killed. This just doesn't fit with the reality we have. Portland keeps the data on bias motivated crimes, and per capita they're really low, actually.
Yeah.
And so I'm also concerned about this fostering of fragility of minorities in the city. So that was the first thing. And then on February 13th, the city council voted to pull out of the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. Now, that resolution was proposed by City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, and she's, in my opinion, an ideologue in so-called social justice. Now, some of the reasons they gave for pulling out of the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force is that they felt the FBI spends too many resources investigating Portland's extremist left-wing groups and not enough on white supremacy. They also felt like the task force targets Muslims. And, you know, our Portland police chief, who happens to be a black woman, expressed great concern that pulling out would actually make our city less safe. But her concerns were ignored. And then, so that was on February 13th. The next day, K2 Shepherd at Willamette Week published a biased report that suggested Portland police were collaborators with right-wing extremists. So they did a public records request on the text of Lieutenant Jeff Nia, and he had communication with Patriot Prayer. And this has sparked a huge outcry in Portland, because, and there are all these reports coming out that it is disinformation saying that Portland police collaborated with white nationalists. That's not true.
It's not true at all. All they did, and apologies for interrupting, all they did was just have basic communication with folks over at Patriot Prayer, because there are lots of protests and rallies that happen. And it's very common practice to talk with people from either side of any issue having to do with their rallies, because it's all about planning. Now, we have just less than a minute left. And for you, because I know that you've gone to rallies as a journalist, as have I, as a talk show host, that it was between Patriot Prayer and so-called Antifa. I've never seen any violence coming from Patriot Prayer, but I have seen threats of violence coming, and actual violence coming, from Antifa.
The thing with Patriot Prayer is that when people come to fight them, they will fight back and they fight to win. They're very quite brutal and unapologetic about that. People use that as examples of them being violent terrorists, for example. And it's great that you mentioned that. This is that. With Lieutenant Nia, Jeff Nia, who's been removed from his position, he was doing standard police practice, gathering intel and building rapport with different protest groups. And for that, he's been slammed by our mayor, who's called for an investigation. And this loops back to the white supremacy resolution. The mayor now says that this story provides a mandate for that resolution.
Your mayor is out of his mind, Ted Wheeler. It's absurd, the level of anti-cop animus in all of this. And then, of course, anti-conservative animus. Patriot Prayer is not a white nationalist group. It's just simply they take position that some on the left disagree with. And they're go disagree all you want. But this whole idea of just labeling anyone who maybe is a Trump supporter or is maybe on the right doesn't automatically make them a white nationalist. We've been talking with Andy Ngo. If you want to follow him on Twitter, and I highly recommend you do, his Twitter name is Mr. Andy Ngo, Ngo spelled N-G-O. So Mrandyngo. Andy, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and thank you for your commitment to tune in for the rest of the week. I know that we normally do the After Show podcast, and it includes producer Tom, but today we did something a little bit different because Tom needs to leave a little bit early because he's the host of a trivia night in Green Lake?
Yes, Green Lake area. Elysian Brewing. Tangletown.
Okay. I'm not saying Tangletown because it's only two blocks long. I'm not calling it that. But you're at Elysian Brewery. What does it mean when you host a trivia night?
Oh, it means I have equipment. I set it up and I ask people wide-ranging questions.
You
sports,
pick the questions?
History. No, no, no. It's all through an organization.
Oh, well, that's not fun. So you're Sporkle
Live
just reading other people's questions?
No, well, they got people at Sporkle Live who put together question sets and do all the hard work. Yeah. I mean, I do it for the fun, but, you know, the money.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. But so then the money is great.
If people show up to this thing tonight, what time does it start?
7:30.
Will you buy them booze?
Say
no, because we don't approve of that.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't do it anyway.
But you'll get them a water.
Round of water is on me.
Sparkling?
Take it easy.
It's got to be tap?
Probably tap.
Okay, so where is it again?
Elysian Brewing Tangletown.
Yeah, so hang out with producer Tom tonight. You do it every Tuesday night.
Every Tuesday.
I promised him that I would give him a plug because he puts up with a lot of my abuse as producers now realize that I'm abusive and I throw things at them. And I promised that I was going to plug it maybe for the last month and a half. And I always forget. Now, in my defense, you never remind me.
Well, I mean,
you never remind me. So go hang out with producer Tom tonight in Tangletown.
My hobbies aren't important.
At the Elysian Brewery as he hosts. So it's just any trivia? What's a typical trivia question?
Oh, man, there's music questions.
Like pop culture stuff?
Yeah, there's a little bit of pop culture. I'm trying to think. There's been so many
history.
Questions. There's some history. Yes.
Do you ever not know? You almost always know the
Almost always
answers.
I never know the answers. Yeah. I might know a sports question here or there.
How many people show up to this?
Oh, wow. I about 35 to 40. And what I was surprised with, I was expecting mostly old people. No. Young people come and they win.
So like nerdy millennials. Because there are a lot of bars that do the nerd night. What is it called? They do
know.
Like nerd nights where they basically do trivia
Speak
questions.
Speak for yourself, man. Trivia night's not nerd night.
I'm not calling it that. I'm saying that's what they call it. And there are a lot of bars and clubs that do this throughout the week and weekend. So it's popular. I find that insufferable because there's nothing worse than someone who thinks they're the smartest person in the room acting out like they're the smartest person in the room during an event in which they can, in fact, be the smartest person in the room. You know what I mean?
Have you ever won a trivia night, Jason?
Of course. I've never, because I would never
okay.
do something.
Well, maybe that's where it's coming from. You're just mad you don't win.
So everyone go hang out with producer Tom tonight and tell him hi and make him feel uncomfortable and awkward. So over the weekend, I got the opportunity to be the keynote speaker for the 30th Legislative District Republicans, and that is Des Moines, Milton, the Jim of Pierce County, Auburn, Federal Way, and it was actually in Federal Way. And they invited me a long time ago to give the speech. And I remember at the time not knowing what I was going to say because the speeches I tend to give are at college Republican clubs. And I ended up coming up with the best speech I could have ever come up with simply on the spot. Like I jotted down some notes of things I wanted to talk about, but it just sort of came to me. And I did something charming at the beginning of the speech where earlier in the day, I have this app that tells me the word of a day.
Oh, do you?
I downloaded it because I think you're the one who told. Didn't you tell
that
me?
That was me, yeah.
So the word of the day, and I got a note earlier on Saturday night is when I gave the speech, that the word of the day was quiescent. And I decided that at the beginning of my speech, just to give a reason for having my cell phone out, which I used to actually record the entire speech, but I didn't want them to know I was recording it, I simply said, oh, don't worry, I'm not going to live tweet. I'm just going to have my phone out so that I can watch the clock, just so I don't talk for too long, because my speech was supposed to be about 25, 30 minutes. And I then said, and this was totally contrived, I said, oh, but look at that. I just got the word of the day. Quiescent. I'm going to try and work it into the speech. I had already written the last line of my speech with the word, so I kind of cheated this.
Wow.
System. And so in any case, the reason why I'm talking about that is on the After Show podcast today, I'm going to play for you the entire speech minus the first 2 minutes because I forgot to hit the button to record. But after that, at the beginning of the speech, I say, oh, my word of the day is quiescent. I'm going to try to sneak it in. So now you know the actual backstory behind the lead-in to that. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the podcast so you can listen to it. Every day after the show, we continue the conversation. Tonight is going to be a special edition of the podcast where I play for you the 22 or 23 minute speech there at the Federal Way Club. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Jason Rand Show.